This week's episode of Mind Theater is a video essay. For the full experience of the show, click the first link in the show notes. Thanks. Imagine walking into a theater in Britain to see a talkie for the first time. It's 1928. You've heard rave reviews about The Jazz Singer, which released earlier that same year. You're aware of its musical notes and stylings, its medium-breaking technical advancements that brought synchronized speech to life onto the big screen, ushering us into this exciting and uncharted era of sound cinema. But you're seeing something different tonight, a flick called The Terror, some imported murder mystery directed by this guy. You shuffle to your seat amidst the other rowdy and eager patrons, and the movie begins. You immediately become swept up in it. It's loud, cacophonous sound, sound that may be too much for a viewer. It's big and brash. It's awkward. 10 minutes go by, and you're maybe a bit bored. Even with the aid of sound, it's quite a slog of a movie to get through. An hour and a half later, you walk out of the theater astounded by what you just witnessed, and perhaps a little disturbed. You're not alone. London critics saw it too, and they loathed it. I mean, really, look at some of these quotes from reviews at the time, describing it and the talkie terror that came to Britain. Invasion. Dreadful. Suicidal. These words paint a picture not only of the disappointment that was The Terror, but the general consensus regarding the ensuing wave of sound in films as an unwelcome element in the already rowdy world that was post-World War I Great Britain. The haunting specter that was more dreadful than the horrors of war they'd just escaped. The pictures that could talk. The silent film era of the late 1800s and early 1900s coincided with the burgeoning technical advancements of the Industrial Revolution, enabling the creation of the very first motion cameras and projectors. Inventors like the Lumiere brothers and inventions like their cinematograph paved the way towards experimentation by filmmakers in both Europe and the United States, and in a few short decades, movies grew from one-seated peep show machines shown in repurposed theaters to the canvas of the greatest silent film geniuses to ever grace the screen, from Charlie Chaplin to Buster Keaton. The early silent filmmakers pioneered virtually every style and genre of filmmaking we'd see throughout the rest of the 20th and 21st centuries. The use of close-ups, long shots, and continuity editing, to name a few, all became essential tools of the filmmaker long before their pictures could talk. It's with this depth latent in the silent film genre that a feeling arose that the inclusion of sound in pictures was not necessary at all. After all, the talkie terror, the onslaught of sound, was a development in film that threatened to disrupt the core of the burgeoning new industry, still reeling off the back of its silent successes. For with the coming of sound came the death of cinema as it was. As author Joff Brown put it, 1929 was the year of big upheaval, as everyone from the cinemas not yet wired for sound, to the actors who fretted about hearing their voice on tape, to cinemagoers uneasy about what sound would do to the cinematic experience as a spectator, were swept up in this inevitable drastic change. Another aspect that complicated this change was the initial talkies being imports from America, giving British audiences first impressions of sound cinema that didn't exactly speak to their cultural and cinematic tastes. And so, in search of talkies to call their own, a great force rose to take the challenge. And his name is Alfred Hitchcock. Hitchcock is a giant we know mostly for his medium-defining works released in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, Notorious, Vertigo, Psycho, but his first 28 films, only 9 of which have survived to today, were completely silent. They consist of silent commentaries, romances, and comedies that stretched more genres than his next 50 films that would come after them. His earliest films were deeply associated with German Expressionism, a cinematic, artistic movement of the early 20th century that emphasized directors using film to depict their inner emotions and feelings, rather than attempting to replicate reality. And so directors put greater emphasis on space, place, and thematic mood in their films. His first 2 films were made in Germany, by the way, but his 3rd and most famous silent work, The Lodger, is steeped in Germanic influence as well, a gothic modernist style of German expressionism. It's within The Lodger we would see the grace notes of Hitchcock's burgeoning style that would go on to define his later, far more successful thrillers. The Lodger follows a string of murders across London committed by The Avenger, a Jack the Ripper-influenced serial killer who targets young blonde women on Tuesday evenings. We're brought into the story as his seventh victim is claimed, following model Daisy Bunting as she first hears the horrific news. That same night, a handsome, secretive young man bearing resemblance to the murderer arrives at the Bunting house looking for a room to rent. From there, we have all the ingredients for one of modern classic cinema's first great thrillers. In Hitchcock's first true foray into the thriller genre, his evocative and unique visual language immediately stands out. This shot in particular is just great. Superimposing feet over glass to peer into the ceiling of the lodger's, heavy footsteps heard by the Buntings below as he paces back and forth. The image of the swaying chandelier further emphasizes this. You can practically hear it. Even through our modern lens, it's a powerfully impactful scene, and it embodies how the best silent films of the era broke through their limitations in creative ways that were more visceral and immediate than effects that could ever be achieved through sound. More on visuals, the entire film is bathed in this dark, smoky, and sensuous atmosphere, as the full title suggests, The Lodger, A Story of London Fog. And Hitchcock's camera does its very best to make us feel ill at ease, pushing in tight in moments of extreme claustrophobia, mirroring the character's weary, fearful states, and enhancing moments of suspense. It's a dark, foreboding thriller with as many things to praise as there are to criticize. The music, for one, especially in this cut, it's constant, gaudy at times, and a rather distracting element in this film. As an aside, the silent film is a bit of a misnomer. They were almost always accompanied by music, piano, or even larger ensembles, which Hitchcock leaned into heavily in his early films, working with some of the greatest composers of the era. The term melodrama derives from the Greek word melos for music, indicating an inseparable connection between music and drama, a fact that remains clear even in our contemporary work. And silent films, more than ever, understood the power of music to move films and audiences. Hitchcock would have better applications of this in later works. But when it came to the talkies, that was a kind of terror that was unavoidable. Hitchcock himself held on to an initial disdain for the specter. In an interview with great French director François Truffaut in 1962, he bemoaned the wave of sound in movies over the past few decades, stressing that silent pictures are the true motion picture art form. Even in his first talkie, Blackmail, this belief informed much of his approach to creating drastically unique and transformative cinema. For starters, this film had two versions made, one silent and one with sound. In the silent version, you witness Hitchcock desperately trying to escape a theatrical style, experimenting far more with camera position and character staging, something he couldn't do in the talkie version due to microphone technology at the time and how they picked up sound. In his second version, however, even with the aid of sound, Hitchcock hung his hat on the visual language of cinema, a tool through which the expressive potential of the human face is made crystal clear. From actress Annie Andra's fantastic expressive facial movements in her performance as Alice, to shots like this one, the way the camera zooms in on the knife as she reaches to protect herself. Andra's entire performance, especially after she's committed the deed, is a striking one. It's a performance that vanishes through her eyes, the point on her face through which we can access her soul, her guilt and dejection. Hitchcock's repeated visual of an outstretched hand that reaches, mirroring the one of the dead assailant, etches itself into our brain, the same as it does into Alice's. We feel her discomfort because the camera is intent on fully capturing it. The most dramatic scenes in the sound version are still largely visual ones. One of the biggest moments of dramatic tension in Blackmail isn't Detective Weber stating he's figured out who the killer is, but his facial expressions as he grabs Alice's glove at the scene of the crime. We realize that he realizes in an instant that Alice is the killer. His face says it all. When Hitchcock did place the focus on sound, he tried to use it in sparse yet creative ways. Like in this scene, listen to how he distorts the dialogue around the word knife, As the guilt creeps into and sets on Andra's face, the camera frames her.
Now, mind you, a knife is a difficult thing to handle. I mean, any knife. I mean, if you use a pen knife, knife.
Alice, cut us a bit of bread, will you?
While Hitchcock's early mastery of the form was evident in his first sound pictures, many of the films released around the same time gave some credence to the fears that Hitchcock had. In the wake of The Terror That Was the Terror in 1928, writer Edgar Wallace seemed to agree with the critics, commenting, "I have never thought the talkies would be a serious rival to the stage." For many, the foray into sound served as a novelty, and film not to be taken as seriously as the higher-brow medium of live theater. In our modern context of cinema, we might find more links between theater production and movies than we do between photographs and movies. We understand the photograph as a deception, a snapshot of the world with idealized lighting, staging, composition, and today even AI tweaks and tools. The sound film is a kind of deception as well, but one that through movement and time more closely mirrors our perception of reality. Hitchcock's work broke through these perceptions, striving to communicate through his sound films something that was more than simply a photograph of people talking. They were motion pictures after all, and as the saying goes, a picture is worth a thousand words. In succession, they offer more depth and detail about the human condition than words and sound could ever muster. It's because of this Hitchcock always focused on the visual component of storytelling as his film's foundation. One of the major attractions of cinema is that it's a medium that allows us to look without being seen, become voyeurs committed to satisfying the insatiable curiosity about the world and its oddities. He even placed us in the minds of voyeurs in films like Rear Window and Psycho. His films were so often expressly about the act of looking, of observing, of invading the personal space of his characters, and the most iconic moments in Hitchcock films are often wordless, like this scene from Young and Innocent. The camera itself acts as a force on the drummer, closing in and serving as the single impetus that impels him to reveal his guilt to the viewer. Or how about the climactic scene in Vertigo, as Stewart sees Novak after her transformation, the dead brought back to life in a moment of rapturous terror. Hitchcock has been host to an entire oeuvre filled with extended shots and dynamic camera movement, of motion pictures contextualized like a photographic memory, in pristine light and elevated visual, where dialogue, where words, the very foundation of speech, isn't stated but inferred and implied. And it's between those implications that a deep effect can't help but take hold within our soul as viewers, changing us forever. It's a mesmerizing experience that few directors are ever able to capture. So the next time you study a Hitchcock film, try turning the sound off. Study purely in terms of the dramatic images he crafted, and you'll witness that even silent cinema can speak volumes. Mind Theater is a solo effort produced and written by me, Eo Ekingbade. For updates on the show as well as my other content, follow Mind Theater Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. If you want to show monetary support, the Ko-fi link is in the description. Thanks for watching. I'll catch you next time.